Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life.
Hey, health junkies. I wanted to create a little bit more community around the podcast. I wanted to make sure I answered some questions, but also opened up the conversation so that folks can get what support they needed and questions answered around the topics that I am bringing up in the podcast. Because I added the Wednesdays that are more mindset work, I definitely thought, you know what? Let's get a community going. Let's do this. So you can head to clever.fm/thehealthfix and join in on the community today. I look forward to seeing you in there and getting to know you better. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Chris Gibson. He's a sought-after skincare expert and holistic health coach, as well as an esthetician. And he is also the best-selling author of the book called Acne Free in 3 Days. He has an incredibly successful YouTube channel called Chris Gibson Live, and he calls his folks skincare junkies. So now I'm going to try to turn all of you health junkies over to skincare junkies as Chris and I go through, you know, what kind of chemicals you can find in skincare products, you know, the debate on sunscreen, exfoliators, retinol, vitamin C serums, everything you want to know to keep your skin looking good as you get older. So let's introduce you to Chris Gibson. Hey there, health junkies. I have Chris Gibson on, and we're going to be talking about skincare today, which, as those of you who know me from Tacoma and my old days of having a spa, one of my favorite things in the whole world, which I absolutely love because Chris calls his folks skincare junkies. And as you know, we are health junkies. So, hey, we're bringing in the two tribes today, and we're going to help you guys just get some really good information on what you can do to take care of your skin in a healthy manner. So Chris, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Happy to be here.
Man, so as we talked before we started recording, I geek out big time on skincare and I haven't actually talked about it on the podcast. So this is exciting for me because it's one of my most favorite things. And I know a lot of people really do want to know the lowdown because we're constantly being inundated with try this product. This is going to make you 20 years younger. So one of the big things I saw that you had done is, and guys, by the way, if you haven't seen his YouTube already, you got to go check it out. You can get lost there for hours and you'll learn everything you possibly need to know about skincare. But one of the things that really popped up, and it was an interview that you've done with a television programming, was the freaky things that we have in our skincare. Right. I'd love to start off with that just because I think so many people are still picking up stuff at the drugstore and not even thinking about what's
happening. Yeah, first of all, is any ingredient in skincare, just like in food, can affect different people differently. So even common, what we would think of as safe space ingredients can be a problem for some people. So you can have a freaky chemical that's not one we talk about today. And I'll talk about how to know that. But there are some very obvious ones, and people are actually better educated these days, most of all the issues with sunscreen. So we'll start there. Sunscreens, chemical sunscreens, some of the chemicals in them, the way they work is they're absorbed into the very top layer of the skin, and they provide a barrier between UVB, UVA light and your deeper cells, which are the ones of concern. The cells that are alive underneath this dead layer, we don't want UVA, UVB light. It's like getting a constant x-ray. So it destroys the cell membrane, damages the DNA, and causes premature aging, as we know. So chemical sunscreens by design are great on one side in that they long-lasting because they're absorbed into those dead skin cells, versus a mineral sunscreen, which sits on the very top of the skin, is not absorbed below the surface of the skin, but reflects the sun back. So one prevents the sun from getting in by providing a barrier. The other prevents by reflecting. The problem with some chemicals in the chemical sunscreens like octinoxate, avobenzone, oxybenzene, are that they have been shown to be sometimes able to penetrate further than just that outer layer, and that when exposed to sunlight, they go through some chemical changes, which in some individuals can cause hormone disruption. In younger people, it can cause developmental issues. Uh, talk, and even toxic shock. And if you're using the spray versions, they can be dangerous because propellants stay flammable until they are completely dry. I think it was three summers ago. This is not funny, but somebody caught on fire at their barbecue because they had just applied, it's poor banana boat, they get blamed for everything. applied banana boat spray and went over to flip the burgers. Well, the propellants weren't dry yet. So, you know, skin burns. So there are a lot of things to consider when you're using sunscreens. Now, out of those, avobenzone is the least objectionable one. So if you're going to use a sunscreen or a hybrid, which is a mix of mineral plus chemical, that's the one to look for. That's typically, that's the ones we're still seeing in cosmetics because it's the least objectionable one. It's not as objectionable on human skin, but it's still objectionable in the oceans, which is the other issue with chemical sunscreens, is that they affect marine life negatively, coral reefs. And in fact, we've seen, as they have been, I'll say outlawed, I like that word because I'm old, outlawed, they've been outlawed since they've been prohibited on certain beaches like the Keys here in Florida, you know, Australia, Hawaii. We are seeing a recuperation of the coral reefs along with things that obviously the marine scientists are doing, but by taking that toxicity out of the ocean, it's working. So just keep that in mind. If it kills something that's in the ocean, it's questionable on your skin. Now, mineral sunscreens have come a long way. They used to be this white thick. When I was a kid in the 80s, you wore it on your nose, like right here. You had a big white triangle, which didn't really do anything but protect your nose. But that's what we did. They tend to be greasy, heavy, and people don't like that feeling on their skin, especially if you're at the beach, because guess what? Sand sticks to you. I know, I live by the beach. So they have come a long way in that they have found, they're not fillers, but they're like carrier ingredients in them that allow them to be better absorbed on the skin so they don't leave that really thick. They still reflect the light well, but they feel like a regular lotion. And they've even been able to come up with ways to apply a little bit of tint in them so that they don't have that, you don't have that kind of opaque look, especially if you have a darker skin. That was a real problem. People with darker skin didn't like that because it was very obvious. Which when you're trying to protect your skin from the sun, I mean, obvious versus skin cancer, you know, that kind of thing. But so I prefer mineral sunscreens. Mm-hmm. Second after that would be the hybrids, where it's mostly mineral, but they put in like 2 or 3% of the avobenzone. Some of them use octinoxate. Again, keeping in mind, that's a very low amount, but it's still one of those chemicals that can penetrate your skin. So you want to think about that. And then SPF 35 is what to go for. We say 30, 35. When you get above 35, you get at 40, 45, that's about the max. 50s and up, a waste of money. They're greasy. They're irritating if you get them in your eyes or your mouth. They're just, and they lead you into a false sense of security in that, oh, I can put this on and I can be out in the sun 50 times the amount my skin's natural protection. Well, the chemical, that sunscreen itself might be able to do that, but there's friction, there's swimming, there's sweating. So no. And so I have so many friends who buy 50s, they'll go on a cruise and they get blistered. I don't understand how I have a tan. I don't understand how I have a sunburn when I put 50 on every day. It's because it wore off and you thought you could put it on once and just be done. So freaky chemicals, look at your sunscreens, you know, try to go mineral if you can. But I always say the best sunscreen is the one you'll wear because in the end, you want to protect your skin from photo aging, but obviously skin cancer as well. So the next freaky chemical is one that's going to sound rather obvious, but it's really hard for people to figure out, and that's alcohol. Mm-hmm. If you have dry skin, even if you don't have dry skin, high concentrations of alcohol, I wonder what
that's a new one.
Alcatrol. alcohol is very drying to the skin, very irritating. And the further up it is in the ingredient list, the more of it there is in the product. So nice talking to somebody who knows all this stuff. But And usually they'll say denatured, but if it's denatured alcohol or regular alcohol, that is like you think of rubbing alcohol. That's the drying. If you see it with another word in front of it, like a fatty alcohol, ester alcohol, anything that is hyphened, it means it's a fatty alcohol, which actually is very hydrating to the skin. So you should just drop the alcohol part altogether and call it something else. So those are okay. And that gets very confusing to folks because they're like, well, I don't want to, this has alcohol in it. Well, what kind? Oh, cetyl alcohol, you know, cetyl alcohol. So depending on how you want to call it, those alcohols, certain alcohols are skin friendly and okay. So again, the thing to look for is denatured alcohol or the word alcohol, and know that the higher up it is in the ingredient list, the more of it there is in your product. Behind that would be fragrance. The reason for fragrance is in the United States, the FDA doesn't require companies to tell you what the fragrance is made of. It could be essential oils, it could be synthetic, be anything. It can be the stuff that's used in your Glade air fresheners. So you have to kind of think about that. If you have sensitive skin, a lot of times fragrance is an issue for folks. There are certain, I consider myself sort of a medium sensitive person. Generally, I'm taking really good care of my skin. So it's very happy. It's used to things like glycolic acid and all that. But some fragrances bother me, and I've narrowed it down to lavender seems to be the problem for me, which is a very typical essential oil that's used in skincare. So if you find itchiness, rash, kind of flushed feeling, kind of like heat rash, you might want to check your products for fragrance. It may tell you, if they're a really good company, what it is. If it's natural, it'll say. But most of the time, just as fragrance. So try to go fragrance-free and see if it doesn't make a difference. I have trouble with body washes because the concentration is so strong in a body wash. They're almost all designed to keep us from stinking, no matter whether we stink or not. So that can be a big problem for your skin. So I tell people to patch test all the time products, to use the product on the inner elbow as per label instructions. If it's a put on wash off like a body wash, do that. If it's a cream that you're going to wear all day, do that. Make sure you give this 48 hours to see if there's a reaction, because it's much easier to put a little cortisone here than to have that all over your face and neck.
Yeah.
So I didn't, it's funny, on the YouTube channel I talk about, I was testing self tanners, and there are some really good self tanners out there. And so I decided, since all the self tanners I had been using throughout the years and the ones I were testing, I didn't need to do a patch test. Well, guess what? I used one, didn't do the patch test, and had a rash all over my chest from it. Mm-hmm. So it's not the product's fault. It was my fault for not testing it. So, you know, just be aware, and that can change over time too. Sometimes we just get sensitive to something, and, you know, hair dye is famous for that sort of thing. People have gone their whole lives dyeing their hair color, and then suddenly they have a reaction and their head blows up and swells. So really, patch testing, I know it's a pain in the caboose, but it's a really good thing to do, especially if you have sensitive skin, because you're going to know early on. So what is that? Three?
Yep. We got to three. We got alcohol, fragrance, and we've done the mineral, talked about sunscreen.
So. And then next we're going to talk about surfactants, sulfates, or sulfides. They're listed different ways depending on the chemical resource or the resource they get these products from. But sodium lauryl or laureth, you see those. Those are surfactants similar to what's in Tide and dishwashing soap and all of that. If you have oily skin, a small amount of that and your foaming face wash will be good to help break down oil. But for general population and people with normal to dry skin, they're very dry and it can be a big problem. They can create sensitivity. They can cause dermatitis. We see that a lot. And for hair, they can cause dry, brittle hair because the oil in your scalp is so necessary to help that hair follicle grow and be strong and look beautiful. And when you're taking all that oil out, which is what we don't want to do with shampoo, it ends up damaging the hair follicle. So there are a lot of brands, most of the major brands have sulfite-free products. So if you have dry hair, dry skin problems, you may want to check that out and stay away from those. So those got to count for two, because there's two different kinds. Where are we now? That's four or five.
Yep.
There's more. Two Let me more. Think real quick. Two more I got to come up with. There's so many.
Any acrylates? Are you worried about acrylates? Are we worried about those anymore?
Well, we know parabens. Yeah. Parabens have sort of been banished for the most part. Occasionally, you'll see that in an overseas product. Those, again, it. What I've read on studies is some people are sensitive to that, some people are not. Mm-hmm. It's, and it, you know, it's like one of the ones that I have in there is urea or ammonia, and your skincare was the other one I was going to talk about. So we'll just talk about these as the same thing. There are a lot of products that use fillers, emulsifiers, and ingredients to help the product stay stable and bacteria free. And so when we're talking about these types of ingredients, that's what they're for. They're to retard bacterial growth so that you don't get a fungus from the stuff where it doesn't go bad. But more often than not, they're also to help keep things spun, blended, the formula from separating on you. Two of them, I'll add two more. So now we're going to go all the way up to almost 10. Petroleum is a big one. It's ammonia. I mentioned that petroleum mineral oil is a problem for some because it's a petroleum, you know, offset. Wax is another big one. If you have acne issues or you're having hair issues, waxes, not silicones. And I'll talk about those too, just to round this out, but wax can be a real problem because it builds up on the skin. In the old days, when you used bar soap and you rinsed off, your skin had that waterproof, the water would just sort of,
yeah.
It's the wax, the amount of wax in that, and it can be a problem.
It
can
block pores. Just like a duck.
Yeah, it's just wax. And so, you know, most of the people I know now have moved away from bar soap unless it's absolutely necessary. And bar soaps tend to be full of fragrance, and a lot of the things we just talked about can be a big problem. Silicone is really skin friendly in the general sense, unless you're allergic to it. There are people who are allergic to silicone. You know, we have silicone scar patches now that keep keloids from forming. They're very helpful. We have silicones that go into hair care products that help your hair look and feel and hold moisture. Basically, silicones, what it does, we have products like The Ordinary's vitamin C suspension that's made with silicone. Again, silicone, think of it as sort of a protectant. It's like dimethicone is sort of the same one. That's another one. Now I went to 11. That can be a little freaky for some people. So you really have to patch test and judge on how these products are working for you. For 90% of the population, silicone is not a problem. Same thing with dimethicone. But these are basically capping ingredients that help hold moisture in and help products work better when they work for you. So I think that's quite a bit right there. But right.
That gives people a lot of area to start with, but also like, yes, it's a good recap too, because yes, we've all kind of heard a little bit of the sodium lauryl sulfate. We've heard about fragrances. We've heard about those, but I think a good reminder, because I'll find that people will fall back into, you know, what catches them, you know, on TV, right, or what a friend.
And the cheaper, and to generally the cheaper the product on cleansing products. Mm-hmm. We'll say that about like, drugstore versions of retinols and things like that. But on cleansing products, the cheaper the product, the more of those fillers and type of ingredients tend to be in them. Okay. So that just know that. So you may have to pay a little more for your body wash but, and your hair care. But as most people know, it's usually definitely worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like hands down. So you mentioned wax, and I know you have some history with acne because you have a book dedicated to talking about that. And a lot of people who are listening to this podcast either have children that are dealing with acne or might be struggling with some adult acne. I know that if I eat dairy, I blow up. And so, you know, I would love to hear kind of what you've discovered to be the big things to assess, obviously gut, you know, those kind of things. Yeah. But tell us what you found were like the big things that you want to look at when you're dealing with some acne.
I wish I could take you by the arm and grab you and take you back to my TV days in the mid 2000s when I was talking about acne being triggered by sugar and especially dairy products, especially for women. And I was against medical doctors on Fox News, and they're like, oh, well, we don't know that that's true. And I'm like, it's true. They take it out of their diet, the acne stops. What is hard about this? So my book was a little controversial. because I was talking about stuff that we kind of know now early on, but you're absolutely right. Acne is an inflammation, it's psoriasis, acne, eczema. They're all technically related in that it's your immune system reacting to what it thinks is an issue on your skin. That can be its own skin cells, as in eczema and psoriasis, or it can be the bacteria that's naturally on everybody's skin, which is acne. Now, I had severe acne as a teenager, started when I was 11, took every medication known to man, applied every solution known to man. Again, this is in the 80s, which should shock everybody to know there's really nothing new, except maybe the retinols, like Etaplene. That's really the newest thing for skin as a topical for acne. And this is what, 35 years later. So that'll tell you something. But those diseases of the skin tend to be triggered by and encouraged by inflammation in the body. So certain foods that people eat, if you're lactose tolerant, if you don't know it, or altered dairy products or products of dairy, especially for women where there has been a lot of hormone use in that production of that food, it doesn't take a lot to kick up or change your oil production in your skin. And sudden changes like that, where the bacteria is able to react to this sudden increase in oil, it's like, oh, it's like fertilizer, mm-hmm. where your body reacts to that. And that's why we get see, especially the ladies get that breakout, you know, starts once a month. And then, as you said, adult for men and women, adult onset acne is a very common thing. So that's usually a combination of a buildup of dead skin cells on the surface that need to come off, exfoliation, and a reaction to the increase in bacteria at the pore level in your skin. Your body's going, whoa, what is this? This is an infection. So that's what happens. But a pore that's not blocked can't fester. So, you know, I'm big on holistic approaches like steaming with a steamer or a hot washcloth to get that sebum to kind of loosen and come out. This is the esthetician talking, and using face wash with lactic acid to help, you know, do the same thing, soften that. And then, of course, using things like a BHA, salicylic acid product to help dissolve that dead skin. These are microscopic cells, and that's all it takes down in the hair follicle for that bacteria to get a hold of. And then you're going, you know, your skin's doing like this. And then people that are not used to acne breakouts or adult onset acne, guess what they do? They go to war with it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to go buy this drying cleanser and I'm going to pile on all this stuff. And it just makes it much, much worse, where really the things I just said, you know, a steaming, a good face wash that helps break down some of that oil, and then the application of a product with salicylic and lactic acid in it is going to generally clear that up. Niacinamide.
Yeah.
Very helpful. Don't go to war and try to strip your skin of all the oil that you have, because your skin's going to make more. It's going to go, whoa, this is too dry. And you're going to encourage the inflammation, which is the thing behind it. And the problem when you're older with the inflammation is that can lead to telangiectasias, which are spider veins. You can end up getting those little broken veins all around the areas if you're like pinching and pushing, because that's your body's response to inflammation in the skin, is to, oh, we need more capillaries. So you don't want that. So just if that starts, you know, look at what you're using. You may want to look at your cosmetics. You may want to cut back on anything you're putting on your skin. Treat it as dermatitis, mm-hmm. like you would. Let's just not put a bunch of stuff on here. Let's check my cleanser, make sure my skin's not feeling squeaky clean and tight. It should feel clean, but hydrated. And maybe a light moisturizer to help slow oil production, or niacinamide. And then if you're getting the deeper bumps, you know, things, like I said, like salicylic acid is very helpful. And Etaplene, which is a retinoid that's particularly effective on calming down the skin's inflammation, which leads to less bumps. And there's always a spot treater. Yeah. You know, I have one. I get the occasional spot. If you can catch it when you first feel it, a lot of times you can knock one out and it'll stop the whole thing. So, but acne is a cystic problem is what I had. It's got me started in skincare. I tried everything. As I said, didn't work. So I had to go holistic on it. And I fasted. I took all food out of my diet for 3 days, which is where the book's name came from, Acne Free in 3 Days. And it stopped. At 23 years old, I had acne since I was 11. I tried everything. 3 days of not eating anything, water, just like a cleanse.
Right.
And no acne. So I'm like, whoa. So as I put food back in, I figured out what my triggers were. You know, I was a teenager, early 20s, with lots of Coca-Cola, occasional chocolate bar, got me through college. Yeah, high sugar. So I was the perfect candida candidate. 70s child who'd been on antibiotics for everything from a cold to tonsillitis to acne. High sugar diet in my teen years. Not my mother didn't keep the stuff in the house. I was good till I got where I could get it on my own. You know, Coca-Cola, candy bars, Snicker bars was my favorite. Kept those in the freezer. Stress, long hours at school, a job on top of it. All the things that you would have to create the stress level that you would need to continue to promote those breakouts. So once I got a handle on that and learned that just because something's labeled for as an acne product, it might not be the best idea for me. I was good to go. I haven't had acne now. Yeah. 35 years. So, cause I'm 58 now. So yeah, 35 years.
Wow. Wow. I wouldn't have guessed your age. I was gonna ask, but I wanted you to say, just because I think for a lot of people, they're looking at you going like, is he 35? Is he 40?
When I just mentioned that in a video on my channel, I wasn't even on purpose. It was just part of the content that I was talking about. And at that time, I think I had maybe 20,000 subscribers and they were surprised. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, we thought you were like 30. But my focus had been holistic approaches to skincare, you know, all the things, you know, skin tags, all the esthetician stuff, you know, just microneedling work. Can you really do that? All that stuff and acne and the things that I've been known for in the past. So when I started talking about anti-aging and yoga exercises to keep your skin tight and hydration and peptides, and I said, look, I mean, look at my neck. Doesn't look 58. I was talking about my neck, not me. And they're like, whoa. So on my video, that video on YouTube, you can see where people back up and look. It was like crazy. It was like I was giving out a recipe and people were trying to write it down. So that sort of changed things on the channel for me, because I figured out, just like I did with the book on acne, that there were a lot of guys, mm-hmm, and women, everybody, who fell into this. I really want to get my skin to look good. I don't necessarily want plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. I don't want to look 20, but I don't like these sunspots because otherwise I've taken pretty good care of myself. And I don't feel old and my body doesn't look old, but my skin's showing the signs. So what can I do? So then it led to what you said. There's all these choices. You've got celebrities coming out with skincare. You've got a vitamin C serum that costs $150, you know, and you've got a vitamin C serum in the drugstore that costs $12. What's the difference? Is there a difference? How do I know when something's working? How long does it take? All this stuff. Oh, it was exhausting. So I thought, you know, I need to shift a little bit. So I still talk about the holistic health stuff and those videos are still very popular, but really the focus these days has been fitness, wellness, longevity, and skincare, because all those things play a role. You know, I look good, but it's not just because I use good skincare. I learned to use sunscreen really early on, which was fortunate since I grew up in Texas, but it's the balance that I try to keep. I work out, I try to keep my weight in check. I watch what I eat, but I enjoy food. So I have a very varied diet, but it leans Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. And I stay away from refined sugar.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I just, it's not in the house. You know, we use stevia here for most everything, but the holidays are coming and I will have pumpkin pie and I will have candy and I will have chocolate and I'll probably get 2 or 3 bumps from it, but that's rare. That's like a rare period for me. So I enjoy stuff. I don't like deny myself anything, but the thing is when you're healthy and you know what's backing it, it's easy to make those decisions. I can walk in a room and go, I don't really want that. It smells great. Like the ice cream smells great. I was on a vacation trip here this summer and we were in Rhode Island and we walked by a candy shop. Oh, it smelled good. You know, you smell that chocolate coming. Chocolate's like my favorite thing. So as you can imagine, I eat chocolate every day, but I don't eat like Snickers bars anymore. I have not, you know, cocoa level chocolate, which is really bitter. But once you get used to it,
yeah,
it tastes sweet. So you're not missing out. So there are ways around all this. I'm big on antioxidants like blueberries, which do have natural sugar in them. I eat avocados every day. So my diet's different than a lot of people's. But if we all go out to eat at a seafood place, I have seafood. If I have what I want. I'm not a big fan of all that, but I'll have what I want. So it is a balance, just like the skincare thing.
Yeah. No, it's huge. And I think it's really important to mention that because I think there is this concept, unfortunately, just the way things are marketed, that, you know, we have these miracle skin serums, right? And we can look like Christie Brinkley or, you know, in overnight.
Under eight filters.
Right, right. Just immediately. And so I think for a lot of people, though, we are, you know, we're getting the idea, okay, we got to do the balance. My folks are definitely understanding the balance. I think what they would love to hear from you, because they're like, okay, dang, Chris is 58. And his skin looks great. And we're talking anti-aging. Like, what are the top things to be thinking about for anti-aging? I know you mentioned vitamin C and E, and it reminds me of a skincare oil that is a little more expensive that I really like from a certain brand, but also retinols, things of that nature. Tell us kind of anti-aging wise, what should folks be paying attention to for their skin?
Yeah, first is not to do too much too fast. So let me preface what I'm going to say. You don't ever, ever, ever want to just jump into stuff and put like 15 different things on your skin a day when your skin is like, what is going on? Yeah. Skin acclimates. So the second thing behind that I'll say before I tell you is patience, because skin cells are created way down, but what we see is old news. They're created way below. So what we do today is affecting the skin cells we don't see yet. Just proof point to those creams and lotions and potions. Mm-hmm. So as you do things that make your life healthier and you do skincare routines that help your skin stay healthier, you see the benefit over time. And that's true with all the things I want to talk about. So first and foremost is face wash. We just talked about that a little bit. It's making sure you're using the right kind for your skin. So your skin should always feel cleansed, but damp and hydrated. Never tight, squeaky clean, stretched, none of that. If that is the case, then whatever you're using is too astringent and it's knocking your pH balance on your skin off, which is going to mean the other products you're using aren't work as well. Mm-hmm. So it's just like a fish tank. You know, you got to get the pH right, or a swimming pool, pH right, then all the other things work better. Same thing for skin. So that's the first thing you want. If you have oily skin, a foaming face wash is usually really good. Gentle foaming face wash. Tons of brands out there with that. Like Veno is one that comes to mind. If you have normal to dry skin, especially as we head into the winter months where it's drier air, you want a creamy, can be foamy, but you want a creamy style face wash that's very hydrating with a lot of lipids. It's not going to strip a lot of oil. It's going to leave your skin really hydrated and protected. And then of course, vitamin C serum. You don't have to spend $150 on those. The thing to know about vitamin C serums, 15% L-ascorbic acid is what you want, or a little higher, to get the benefits. You can get benefits for lower, but it's going to take longer. Okay. So vitamin C serums made with L-ascorbic acid. I mentioned the Ordinary before. There's like a 23%. There's a bunch of these. Mm-hmm. You don't have to spend $150. Generally, the more expensive ones are going to include things like vitamin E, ferulic acid, and maybe some other beneficial. So if you're buying a formulation that has a lot of those type of ingredients, it's kind of worth the money because you would have to buy them separately otherwise to get that formulation. So, but vitamin C serum basic, if you have sensitive skin, then look for one that has been made with sodium or magnesium ascorbyl phosphate, which is a derivative of that vitamin C, but it's stable. So when you put something unstable on the skin, you run the risk of irritation. When you put something stable on the skin, you don't as much usually. And it just takes longer for that product to work. So vitamin C serum every morning, very important. If you're showing the signs of photoaging, I believe in applying a peptide solution, like the Inkey List collagen booster, or there's a number of brands out there with peptides. Peptides are just amino acids that your skin produces anyway, but we do less of them as we get older. And it helps support the life of your cells, your skin cells that are still alive just below the surface, so that as the surface skin falls away, your skin looks better and better and better. And it allows the vitamin C serum to work. And then, of course, exfoliation. not a big guy on scrubs. As an esthetician, I've seen, I won't blame the scrubs. I blame the humans, because we tend to want to scrub everything too much. We want to do more is better. So if a little scrub's going to make me, my skin look this good, next time I'm going to go 10 minutes instead of two. So
you can avoid.
Yeah, we've all done it one time. And then you're like, I won't do that again. A glycolic acid product, 10% or higher, anywhere 10 to like 14, 15% as a serum every morning helps speed up that cellular turnover and get that dead, dull skin off so that your skin looks better, but that your products work better. And then sunscreen, of course. And we already covered 8 miles of sunscreen earlier, so you guys know what that is. But then for the evening, your evening cleansing is your most important, because you've got a day's worth of stuff on your skin, sunscreen, cosmetics, gluten's, irritants, what have you. So a good cleansing, double cleansing, for those who wear cosmetics, just to make sure you get everything off. And then I myself apply peptides again, and then retinol serum, because retinol is the king still of the topicals we have that actually do something further down in the skin. They're really not supposed to be absorbed according to the FDA. Topicals should not go any further than the outer layer of your skin, but using retinol over time, or prescription strength tretinoin, which is perfectly fine, over time, it affects the cells deeper down. It helps remove DNA damage. It helps the autophagy process that goes on in our skin when we sleep work better. So that what happens is you get plumper skin, usually plumps out fine lines and wrinkles, even skin tone, speeds up that cellular turnover, and supports collagen production. So for people who've been using tretinoin or Retin A for the last 20 or 30 years, and I meet them these days, their skin looks really good, because that's been a supportive factor. But the good news is you don't have to have prescription strength. You can start with an over-the-counter, and you're going to have to give it 90 days to a year for it to make a big difference, where you're going to go, where you're going to feel like you aged backwards some, but it will work. Again, it takes patience. There is an acclimation period with retinoids, usually for most people, some redness, some dryness as the skin gets used to that. And that's because there's a chemical change that happens with that product when it's on your skin. It goes from retinol to retinaldehyde, then to retinoic acid, which is what your skin actually uses. If you have tried retinols in the past and you're sensitive, you can now get retinaldehydes, which takes out that one step, which seems to be the one that causes the problem. Retinaldehyde on the skin, it's usually very yellow in color. It goes right into retinoic acid, and the skin's able to use it. A lot of people are able to tolerate that.
Yeah, found that.
Very well. And if you can't tolerate any of it, if vitamin A is an issue for you, then there's bakuchi oil, which is an herbal oil that does similar effects, but has none of the components of vitamin A in it to set your skin off and make it unhappy. So where there's a will, there's a way.
Absolutely.
So that, yeah, that retinol at night. And the reason we say retinols at night is sunlight degrades them, breaks them down on your skin, and they become worthless. And it makes your skin more sensitive to sunlight. So it's just better in that overnight sleep repair cycle that your skin's going through, that you have that available for it to use, sort of like, for again, fertilizing the ground. And then most people see a real improvement. Now, one thing I've added to that, because I've tested them and I really like them, are the overnight hydrating masks, which are Paula's Choice has one, Burt's Bees has a really good one. This is a hydrating, it's like a gel that you apply to your skin. It absorbs much like a cream, almost like a cold cream, but it does becomes invisible, and you wash it off in the morning. So it's not a physical mask that you put on, but it can really, really, if you have hydration problems, if that's the root cause of fine lines and wrinkles for you, that stuff's amazing. Because you think you're sleeping all night with this super infusion of moisture being put into your skin. I like that much better than slugging, which is applying petroleum to your skin. If you're going to do that, use Aquaphor. At least get something that has something meaningful in it besides just, you know, petroleum.
Right.
But really, these hydrating masks, they're not expensive. You get the same hydration benefits as slugging, but you get, there are ingredients in there that are good for your skin. There'll be a bump of vitamin E, there'll be a bump of vitamin C, and some herbals like green tea that help with discoloration and melasma. So I really like those. I've been trying that out myself and like them. So that's a basic skincare routine.
Nice. It's
five things. And if you want to step up your game, they're the red LED light masks that used to have to go to the salon and pay lots of money to get that treatment. You can now own one and use that 3 minutes a day. And they really do help over time. Again, all of these things that we're talking about are non-invasive, especially topicals, take time for the results to be seen. But, you know, radio frequency, RF therapies, alt therapy, electro stimulation of your muscles under your skin, all of those things work. Those are the things that celebrities and people with lots of money were spending lots of money on those treatments in the 80s, 90s, and the 2000s until they started becoming available at home.
Right.
You know, now you can do these things at home. And they were going in and paying for this stuff every week or two. You know, I don't recommend doing, you know, microneedling is a little, you can do that at home, but you really need to go have a session with an esthetician or dermatologist. If you're going to do that, I always say at least do one with a professional so you see how it works and how your skin reacts before you do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's a, you know, there's a certain amount of pressure you need to apply. So I know there, I know a lot of people who do these techniques at home that are very good at it, but they had their trial and error period. And I just think it's good to spend the $100 and go have it done so you know what to expect.
Yeah.
And then if you're comfortable doing it for yourself, you'll know, you'll got something I can do the roller, you know, once a week or what have you. But that's a very, that's a big trend right now because the word got out that it helps with cellulite and stretch marks. And, you know, it does help with a lot of different things, but it also carries risk of infection. You can go too deep. You tear up your skin if you don't know how to apply them. A lot of people don't know you got to pick that roller up every single time to try to turn it.
Oh, but, God.
Yeah, well, you know that and I know that, but that's, you know, other people don't. And then there, of course, the last thing I'll say is if you really want to tighten your skin and you're really still not wanting to do Botox or lifts, is the new technology, which is the micro-coring. Which is sort of like microneedling, but it is, they take a tiny, it's a core out of your skin, much like a biopsy, but it is microscopic. So you don't see it. You don't really bleed, but they, by taking, it's sort of like microneedling on steroids, by taking those little tiny cores out of the skin, it really turns, it really tells the skin, oh, there's damage. It's not really damage. Doesn't, you can't even see under a microscope where the core, once it comes out.
Wow.
But it's a significant amount of skin compared to just a needle punch. So it helps lift and tighten. So the before and afters, so this is developed by a dermatologist and a medical doctor. I'm about to do a video on it. It's an in-office procedure. You can't do it at home, but it's doing some significant stuff for folks. So when that used in tandem with say an ult therapy cell, you know, or a RF therapy, it's amazing because it really turns on the, it tells the mitochondria, whoops, there's a hole there. We got to fix it. So it lifts the skin up. It's pretty fascinating how that works. So it's called micro coring. Think like coring for gold, you know, like digging a hole in the ground. So
we're coring.
There you have it.
Hey, that's awesome. I've because of not owning the spa anymore, not being in the skincare realm, I didn't even hear of micro coring. So this will be,
that's really new.
It'll be super interesting to take a look at that because microneedling is definitely that with PRP, doing a lot of that in the office. But yeah, the coring, very fascinating. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, so many things. So many things. So now I think folks have a really great idea of what kind of information that you could literally throw at them based on the
Yeah, we didn't even talk about supplements. That's a whole other show.
Yeah. Supplements. I mean, I'm even like, sometimes I'll see, and I think we're gonna have to do another show. Cause I'm like, sometimes we'll have a lot of folks that'll get dermatitis around the eyes,
yes,
around the ears. And I feel like that might be something we need to preview into another show. Cause it's a big thing with hormone stuff.
Yeah, it is. Cause it's a hard area to exfoliate. It's super sensitive, but we get a lot of dead skin here. So, and there's not really a skin peel that you can put on your eyelids. So there are some ways around that. And then of course supplements, you know, the vitamin K2 thing is huge for, especially for the ladies, because it helps the body do, it's something we're really deficient in food. It's really hard to get. It's not vitamin K1, it's vitamin K2, but it helps the body manage the calcium so well when it's in the correct nutrient level in your bloodstream. It gets the calcium where it needs to go, your bones, you know, your cartilage, your collagen, your hair, all of those things benefit from that. And it keeps it out of your arteries. So it slows down. They had my mom on this back in, she passed in 2011. So it's about 2008 was the first time I heard of that. And they had her on vitamin K2 and so like Boniva and stuff for bone. But the vitamin K2, she got a little bit of improvement with the pharmaceuticals. When they added the vitamin K2, it was amazing. She got like 4 points in her bone scan. That's a big jump.
Yeah.
For someone in their 70s to be able to amass that much more bone because she had very weak bones. So so very important to look at that nutrient. It's, I always say it's good to go get tested and see what you're short on, because you can do that through the mail now. You can send that out to a lab and they'll go, you're deficient in potassium and magnesium. You need to up that in your diet. And then of course your doctor, always talk to your doctor about that. But yeah, there are some things you can do with supplementation. Not overdo, like everybody has done with vitamin D. Now we have people ODing on vitamin D. You know, again, more is better, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Is what the concept is in terms of how we think. But yes, as we know, not always the case. Test, don't guess, folks. Test, don't guess. Oh my goodness. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with everybody. You know, my mind is also filled with so many things. I can't wait to write all the show notes out. So folks, you definitely want to go over to drjkrausend.com for the show notes with all of the tidbits of what Chris gave us. But you can also find Chris online, definitely his YouTube channel. for sure. You can go down all kinds of rabbit holes there. And so it's Chris Gibson Live, correct?
Yeah, you can put Chris Gibson or Chris Gibson Live. I come up. And then and under every video in the video description are all of my social media links. So, you know, I'm easy to find. Chris Gibson. It's the only one that's weird is TikTok, because it's skincare with Chris.
Okay.
So I didn't want to, there were too many Chris Gibsons on TikTok. So I'm like, oh. So skincare with Chris and you'll find me. Although eventually they'll associate my name and I'll just show up. But yeah, TikToks are, that's all. The TikToks and the shorts on YouTube are my long form videos in a short tip format. So in a minute or less, you get the boom, boom, boom.
Gosh.
And then if you want to go watch the full video to get the big boom, 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 you can do that. But TikTok is, I'm trying to put my foot out there so there's some sanity.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it comes to skin.
Makes really sense.
Unsanity stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some freaky things going on there, especially with the younger kids there. Now, in terms of folks working with you, because you've given so much information, I'm sure a lot of people are like, okay, cool. How do I work with Chris? How do I get his insight? They go to your website.
Chris, you go to my website, or you can go to the community, the Skin So Fabulous. You just type Skin So Fabulous in Google and it comes right up. That's a free, it's a blog, but it's a really a community. It's a network. So it's free. And there are some questionnaires that you can fill out for yourself. They take like 2 minutes and it'll tell you what skin type you are and what type of products you should be using. There's that for general and that for acne. And then you can DM me. And I do still give one-on-one consultations virtually about skincare routines. I'm not going to cure your disease, but I will tell you what skincare products are probably better for you. And we can develop a skincare protocol for you from skincare products and treatments. So we can do that online.
Awesome. Chris, thank you so much for all your information. I sincerely appreciate it.
No, it's fun.
Hey, fellow health junkie. Thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.